Radio 4. The time is 27 minutes past 12.
Well, now it's high time for Radio 4 to close down, as we present a programme especially for listeners who strongly dislike wacky forms of humour. So we present Not the Birkis Way.
Good evening and welcome to Tonight, introduced by me, the obscure Scottish one, who only does it for the suit allowance. Later on in our special holiday spot, Joan Bakewell will be showing you some interesting things to do around the middle of April. And April will be showing you some interesting things to do around the middle of Joan Bakewell. But first, here with me on this enormous circular podium in the studio, I have the celebrated explorer and roughage fan, leader of the recent British Himalayan Hurt Yourself expedition, and author of the best-selling book, Mrs. Mills, The Hard Way, from deepest anoraks, Doug Healthy.
Hello.
Hello. I believe you have, in fact, just completed climbing Everest the hard way.
Yes, that is correct, yes.
Perhaps you'd like to tell us about it.
Yes, well, we started from Nepal with 15 Sherpas. Sidestep, three kicks, turn, kick, then glide, and establish camp one.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was kick, turn, a short routine on tap, and then kneel, pointing at the summit.
I see. I believe that, in fact, this was the first expedition Lionel Blair had planned for you.
Yes. It was a lovely routine. Very, very inventive.
Did the terrain cause special problems to the choreography?
Oh, only completely, yes.
Well, thank you very much, Doug. That's all we've got time for. Dennis.
Thank you, Sue. Well, with me now, I have the Honourable Mr. Roger Fitztitley Fortescue Smith. Smith, spelt a posh away, to Thrimson hyphen hyphen mince.
No. Actually, the mince isn't pronounced.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. Tell me, Mr. Fitztitley Fortescue Smith. Smith, spelt a posh away, to Thrimson hyphen hyphen. I believe you originally went to public school, but now only by the magazines.
Yes.
And that you have just started work as BBC Radio's token man with a sense of humour.
Correct, yes.
Well, I'm sorry, that's all we've got time for, so back to you, Sue.
Thank you, Donald. And now I'm going to talk to Mr. George Wett of Weybridge in Braces, who, I understand, once managed to sit all the way through this programme without the aid of rigor mortis.
Yes. That's right, yes.
Well, that's all we've got time for, so back to you, Cliff. Thank you, John. And I have with me now Mr. Frank Get It In Somehow, who's going to talk to us now about breeding rabbits.
Good evening.
Mr. Get It In Somehow, yeah? How long is it since you first started breeding rabbits?
Approximately 15 years, 3 months and 2 weeks.
I see. And perhaps you'd tell us how many rabbits you've actually bred so far.
Yes.
In fact, perhaps you'd tell us now.
Oh, yeah. Well, approximately naught and a bit.
Naught and a bit.
A bit of another naught, you know.
So, in fact, you haven't actually bred any rabbits whatsoever?
Approximately no.
I see. How many rabbits did you actually start off with when you began trying to breed them?
Oh, approximately one.
Just one.
Yeah, that's right.
One rabbit.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
It never occurred to you to say, get yourself another one?
God, turn it up. What, when the first one was such a dead loss?
Mr. Get It In Somehow, do you in fact know how to tell two rabbits apart?
Yeah, of course I do. You throw a bucket of water over them, don't you?
No. Tell them apart.
Oh.
Mr. Get It In Somehow, I put it to you that you are, in fact, a loony.
Well, approximately, yes.
And that if you really want to know about the facts of rabbits, you should watch this.
Where Babies Come From, a sex education film for rabbits. Produced by the National Rabbit Family Planning Association and adapted from Rabbitopolitan magazine, How to Make a Fast Buck.
There's nothing embarrassing about the business of growing up and having babies. It's all part of life's rich pattern and being a rabbit. Of course, before actually starting a family of your own, there are certain things you should know about. For a start, you should know about 50 rabbits. You should also know the difference between a man rabbit and a woman rabbit. If you've never seen a woman rabbit, then go and listen to Margaret Thatcher's next speech. Or, if you're already familiar with these differences, then it's time for you to move on to the first stage of courtship, which is really getting down to it. And here we see a young rabbit really getting down to it like there's no tomorrow. And here we see them all really getting down to it. Naturally, there are other important facts of life for the adolescent rabbit to learn. For instance, the business of meals. Tea is extremely important to a rabbit. Because if a rabbit goes without its tea, it becomes a rabbi. Which makes it very difficult to keep really getting down to it all the while with a bowler hat on.
Dear sir, I've just about had all I can take this evening. That's why I switched the radio on. And what did I find? More unbridled smut and naughty goings-on, the like of which we Radio 4 listeners haven't heard since that time Patrick Campbell introduced the Tijuana Brass. Therefore, in the absence of any decent alternatives, I and my husband now propose the start of our own radio show. And here it is.
The Listeners, an everyday story of people who go...
I say, Doris.
Yes?
What's another word for Harold Wilson?
Oh, God.
Oh, that'll do, yes. Yes, you see, I'm typing another phone call to the BBC. Yes, it's all about the filth and the smut in the party political broadcast.
Oh, Dan, do you know what I went and did last night?
No.
Oh, thank goodness for that.
Well, I think it's about time we complained about another radio program.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Yeah, let's see what's on.
And time. Ah, come in, Thrimson, and close the door. How long have you worked here at this company now, Thrimson? 3 years, I see. Now, it's not my intention to play on personal handicaps at all, Thrimson, but I'm afraid it hasn't escaped my attention of late that you are, in fact, a trim phone. Quite. Anyway, it wasn't that I wanted to see you about. Would you just send in Mr. Jobes, please? Ah, good morning, Mr. Jobes.
Good morning, Mr. Funny Lines, sir.
Yes. Will you come over here, please, Mr. Jobes?
Yes, sir.
All right, now that's far enough. That's far enough, Jobes.
Yes, sir. Right, sir.
I see the old... falling to pieces problem hasn't cleared up yet.
No, sir. Doesn't seem to get a lot better, sir, now. Oh.
I see the right arm's gone since you were last in here.
Yes, that went last Thursday, sir. Just completely came away at the shoulder, sir.
Yeah, quite. Well, sit down, would you, Mr. Jobes?
I can't really do that, sir.
They've both gone now, have they?
Friday afternoon, sir, the second one went. Still look on the bright side, that's what I say. My wife's always wanted a pair of earmuffs.
All right. Leave them where they are, Jobes.
Yes, sir.
Now, Jobes, the thing is this. I'd be prepared to overlook your rather unfortunate disintegration complaint were it not for the somewhat sensitive nature of your position.
Yes, sir. Excuse me.
I understand. I don't think I need to remind you what that position is, Joe.
No, sir. Princess Grace of Monaco, sir.
Exactly. Princess Grace of Monaco. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Jobes, but you first took over as Princess Grace of Monaco in 1952, I think it was.
Yes, sir. Pardon.
When, to my recollection, the major proportion of your anatomy held together reasonably well without the aid of freshly chewed lumps of spearmint.
Yeah, I think it did, sir, yeah.
Since then, Jobes, I think you'll back me up on this one. You haven't done a great deal to foster the image of Princess Grace as a glamorous young international socialite.
No, sir, no, no.
More of a 42-year-old wizened little tow-rag who leaves a trail of somewhat unpleasant litter behind him wherever he goes.
Yes, sir.
Well, Jobes, all I can say is, just not on anymore.
Oh, you've noticed, haven't you? Sorry about that, sir.
Yes?
There will now be a short intermission, sir.
Oh, thank you.
The classic fragrance. The original distinctive aroma. This time you can get beautiful girls to grin at you while you jump up and down in the sea without having to forget to put your bathing trunks on first. This is the lotion with the ice-cold feeling that keeps your body fresh all day.
Yes, keep your ice-cold bodies fresh all day with Old Stiff Embalming Fluid. The new after-death splash-on from Stifco. Old Stiff, as advertised on Ian Mikado.
In the year 1400, before somebody found out, a meeting of the Curia, the council of the greatest cardinals in all the land, was called together by Pope Jaime the Gross Blunder. They were to decide the most far-reaching philosophies of the physical world.
For his popeness.
Idiot, I said enter in a litter, not a letter. Now, the main function of this specially called council, to decide the doctrine of the world's position in the universe. Signor Galileo and Signor Other Galileo, what say you on this matter?
Well, Pope, I have spent the last 30 years calculating the mean perigorandities of the astral bodies in relation to the position of the world.
First, prepare the lasagna, mix it carefully, and boiling it in slightly salted water until it is delicately limp but firm, cleanse and add butter.
Yes, your wife Frockness and I, by equally persistent observation of interstellar parallax, have also been assessing the effect of cosmic displacement.
Then in the serving dish, alternate layers of the pasta with the minced beef and tomato filling, liberally sprinkling with Parmesan cheese.
And further, your Pope Papalness, I have no doubt that the Earth is engaged in an elliptical path around the focus of the center of the solar plexus.
Your mounds are like milk-white orbs. I long to touch four or five of them.
I mean,
serve immediately with a fresh green salad.
Galileo's...
Yes, me pope.
I know you're both Italian, but to be honest, I don't think these subtitles are really helping much.
Oh, sorry, me pope.
Ouch.
So, anyway, I think you see our point, Mpope. Our world undertakes this annual circumscription about the sun within the area bounded by the solar system.
Good. All in favor? Right, that's settled then. It's a haddock. Now, can we move
on? Your Holiness.
Yes?
Did you say haddock?
Haddock, yes. Why?
Well, it's just that I thought we just agreed that the world probably went around the sun. Upon what scientific evidence exactly do you base your assertion that the world is in fact a haddock?
Well, the way I see it is this.
Yes?
I'm the Pope, Sunshine, and don't you forget it.
Yes. I think that's where we must have gone wrong. A haddock, yes, of course, yes.
Right, next. The nature of the stars in the heavens. Now then, Cardinal Bitpart.
Well, at the moment, the options for the nature of the stars in the heavens are as follows. One, old milk bottle tops that God's landlady forgot to throw away. Two, Arthur Scargill and his colleagues bending over in a distant coal mine. Three, an Irish blackboard after a lesson on punctuation. Four, what a fireman sees after sliding down his pole a bit too quickly.
Fair enough, Cardinal Bitpart. So I think that one's pretty obvious, then. It's a shoal of herring.
Your popness, I'm getting a bit fed up with this. Already this morning we've declared Venus a halibut, Neptune a killer mollusk, Mars some plankton, and the moon the man from Atlantis.
Well?
Well, the moon is a white, boring thing with no life. And the man from Atlantis...
Yes?
Nothing.
Right, then. Now, my next proposal is that we breathe through gills, sew both our legs together, and wriggle about a lot.
You're mad.
Oh. Mad, am I?
Yes.
Oh. Well, I don't care. Since you have both dared to blatantly flout my divine theories of the universe, you shall both be charged with gravest heresy. Oh, ye miserable heretics, witness my revenge and judgment, that ye shall henceforth be doomed to eternal perdition and exquisite suffering in the fires of dummy hell.
Dummy hell?
What? Who told you it was only dumb? I mean, what makes you think that hell might be a wee bit nippier than perhaps it should be?
Well, you just called it dummy.
Don't mess me about, Ducky. This is real hell, all right. Oh, yes.
Oh, close that door. It's very freezing in here.
I thought this was hell.
No kidding, pal. 16 hours on the trot and no break for lunch.
But I thought this place was supposed to be ridden with eternal suffering.
You wouldn't chuckle, cousin. No joke standing here all day rustling this bit of cellophane, you know. Anyway, less of the chat, sister. My duty now to strip you both of all your worldly garments and lock you up in this gloomy dungeon. So come here with you.
No, no, let go of me. Oh,
chastity belt you've got there.
Hey, thank you. Thank you. I got it in the Mormons.
Yeah. Oh, I thought your eyes were watering. Anyway, come on, both of you, into the dungeon.
But there isn't any dungeon.
What do you call this, then? A bread bin?
Well, yes.
Damn. I see you've been around.
Well, there'll be another edition of Dave Allen at Large at the same time next week. But now, Dancing Club, introduced by Victor Sylvester.
Good evening, ladies and people who wish they were ladies. And tonight, I'm going to run over a few basic steps with my partner here, Judith Chalmers.
Hello.
And the Judith Chalmers he's dancing with was made completely by hand. Her mother stitched the Judith up by using 900 sequins, and the Chalmers were put together with the aid of a very tight bra.
And this is how the quick step goes. The gentleman and lady start in the basic position. First, the step forward by the man to the beat slow, while the lady follows. Then the step is repeated with the other foot, followed by the quick step to the side with the third foot. The lady then spins on her fifth foot, gracefully bringing round feet numbers 9, 10, 11, and 13 to slow. Dipping on feet 49 and 50, the gentleman then... Excuse me. Yes? Really? Oh, dear. Yes, I am, aren't I?
sorry. Well, it would appear, in fact, that the number of centipedes watching this show is a little less than I'd imagined. In fact, only one. And as that's trying to chat up a false eyelash at the moment, I think it's probably best if we move on to our next programme, which is World of Sport.
Hello, good afternoon, and welcome to World of Sport, introduced, as always, by Not Me At All.
Hello, good afternoon, and in a really jam-packed edition of World of Sport this week, we've got 500 packs of jam. At 3:30, it'll be time for racing from Doncaster, as that's the time John Rickman's arriving there. Then at 3:30, we're all going to sit watching a load of horses tramp round and round a paddock for 5 hours with a running commentary from our panel of anaesthetists. And highlights of the day's action at Chepstow, where one of the cameramen managed to break free of his straitjacket. That's followed at 10 p.m. by Meet the Bitties, an in-depth analysis of the bits left on the floor of the paddock after a load of horses have tramped round for 5 hours. This programme replaces Russell Harty, although nobody's expected to notice. Then at 4 a.m. tomorrow, we'll be at Aintree in good time for the 1987 Grand National, when we'll be watching a load of horses...
Well, thank you, Not Me At All there. And now it's time for On the Tonsil with Barry Baldhead.
A very good hello to you from me, Barry Baldhead, and I'm just about to take my hat off. So stand by with your piece of smoked glass. And On the Tonsil comes to you this after horse racing from the Royal Nose, Throat and Prince Charles Hospital, Chiswick, where the day's play has just started. Well, let's just have a recap, first of all. Brian Clough has now successfully stuffed into his mouth 4 mattresses, 3 wing-type armchairs, and a horsehair sofa. But he still hasn't caught up with Malcolm MacDonald, who leads him by a roll of lino and 2 dead Cocker Spaniels. Oh, but here comes Clough again now, and what's this? And this must surely be the most enormous stuff in the mouth job ever attempted. We've never ever seen anything on such a gigantic scale as this. Clough is actually going to try and stick his own head in his mouth. Yes, that's him limbering up with his lips now in readiness. And, of course, if he succeeds in stuffing this one in, it'll be the biggest thing we've seen since John Inman...
Thank you, Barry. And just a late result from the Hillbillies Women's Golf Tournament. 13 women are now under par, but the police are expecting to make an arrest very shortly. And quickly on now to the World Bingo Championships from the Mecca Ballroom, where, of course, Miss World was held by Eric Morley. And Eric Morley was held for questioning. Your commentator is overpaid.
8-3, number 11. On its own, 56. Tolstoy's Barber, number 4. Up the Ganges, death 30. 2 little squids, number 9. Net with a handbag, 36. An Irishman's gross, we all know that. Failed the medical...
All right, over here, missus. Let's check you.
52. 26. 48.
Wow, cool. Now check your card, see?
All right, here we go. 41.
No.
93.
No.
18. No. 67.
No.
25.
No.
15.
No.
86.
No.
72.
No.
49.
No.
101.
No.
28.
No.
47.
No.
23.
No.
I'll have the fluffy teddy bear and the goldfish in the bag, please.
Get her out of here, will you? Political asylum, number 10.
You haven't given me my prize.
Yeah, of course I haven't given you your perishing prize. You got all the wrong numbers.
Well, I work in the post office.
Good. Now get her out of here, will you? Right, eyes down. Age of consent, 16. Unlucky for some, 15. Back to the studio, and over two. Dickie Davis. I wonder if it's true.
Thank you, David. We've just heard that there's been a disturbance among the crowd at Newcastle United's home match this afternoon, so straight away let's join Fred, should have stuck to doing how, on the terraces.
Hello, and this is Fred. Yes, I wish I had stuck to doing how at the Newcastle United ground. In fact, I've managed to get the crowd here to come over and talk to me, and his name is...
Eric Pode of Croydon, sir.
I see. Now, I understand that earlier on there was a bit of a disturbance when part of you spilled over onto the pitch.
Yes, that's right, sir. Yeah, I've got a very small, unruly element, you know.
Yes, and I also understand you had a bit of trouble with a Bristol supporter.
No, I never wear one.
Yes, well, it does get very violent at this end of the terrace, of course. Now, how, in fact, do you manage to stick it up the cop?
I wait till he's not looking.
Well, isn't he a panic? Well, thank you, Mr. Croydon. And now from me, it's
course,
back to the studio.
Of course, you know, I'm a rugby player myself. I play in the scrum for that Welsh team.
So Wrexham?
Don't do him a lot of good. Here.
Yes?
Bob Monkhouse writes a lot of these down, you know.
What a waste. Well, with that, it's back to Dickie Davis in the studio.
Our team's doing very well in the cup at the moment.
Oh, good. Well, I expect you'll soon be through to your third leg.
Yeah, yes. I must get a new pair of trousers, mate. I had to do that. He was getting on my nerves.
That was the last in the present series of Not the Burkis Way. Next week sees the return of the Burkis team, Joe Kendall, Chris Emmett, Nigel Rees and Fred Harris, in a brand new series of The Burkis Way to Dynamic Living.
Rabbit Reading for Beginners, presented by Michael Parkinson.
Hello. Welcome to Rabbit Reading for Beginners. And my guest tonight is Bugs Bunny.
Yeah, what's up, Doc?
Mr. Bunny, I read somewhere, I think perhaps it was in my script, you have, or had at 3 o'clock anyway, 5,976 children.
Yeah, right. Well, you see, what I did was...
I'm sorry, I'll have to cut you off there.
Why?
Well, if it worked for me, it could work for you.
That's the Burkis Way to Dynamic Living, written by Andrew Marshall and David Renwick, and produced by John Lloyd next week here on Radio 4.
That was last week's episode. You can hear another edition of the Burkis...
I thought...